Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah. Austin Film Festival was an amazing adventure for me. Yes But Why was invited to join the press corps, and I spent the better part of Friday the 25th and Saturday the 26th doing interviews in and around the Driscoll Hotel in downtown Austin. My next chat was with filmmaker Zoe Ward. Zoe's short film, Soft and Pink, was made as her MFA thesis presentation at UCLA. I was excited to talk to Zoe about writing and directing her movie, as well as composing both of the film's musical numbers. I was also fortunate enough to moderate the Q&A for Zoe's short program. Here, we discuss the theme of good people doing bad things. Your chance to see Soft and Pink is tonight, Monday, October 28th, at 6 p.m. at the Galaxy Highland Movie Theater.
I just finished my MFA at UCLA. I went into the directing path, and I actually finished it. I graduated a week before I gave birth, so I'm actually a new mom.
Oh my God!
And yes, it's true. I started the program when I was 30 years old, and for me, the reason it kind of took me a long time to make that decision, I felt like I was a writer from a very young age. I thought I was going to be a novelist or a poet. So I wrote constantly. I didn't really come from a very creative family. It was just sort of like, you do your thing. We don't know what it is, but you're having fun with it. It's great.
Like vaguely supportive?
Yeah. So I didn't know what filmmaking was. I didn't know there were careers making movies. It wasn't on my mind at all. In college, I became, among my friends who were all poets and writers, I became known as the critic. And after a while, it really like dampened my desire to write because that was just how I was seen. Oh. So I kind of became the writer who didn't write. And I actually moved to New York to work in publishing after college. And that was like my nickname, was the writer who didn't write. As a compliment, I took it as a very high compliment because what it meant is that I have always felt like I have a soul for story, that I really love creating worlds and imagining conflict and, you know, putting all of these pieces together and see how they work and changing them up, like all that thing. And then when I was in my late 20s, I was working. It was honestly the shittiest job I've ever had. I shouldn't say where it was, but it was like an arts admin job. I was like,
yeah,
you know,
don't say where it is.
Yeah, yeah. And it was the most soul-sucking, boring job I've ever had. But it was at a college that offered free classes to their employees. So,
oh man, that all of those things that you've just said, even without the name of it, an arts admin at college, they all sound terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the level of bureaucracy and drama is so high.
Very, high.
Oh my God.
So I started taking free classes that were just like,
that's awesome.
Learn how to use a Bolex camera and learn what like screenwriting is. So I started taking those classes, and it was my life bulb. Yeah, it was my life bulb.
Got it.
It was my light bulb moment.
Life bulb.
Because I saw that what had been holding me up as a writer was the fact that I really loved the iterative process of filmmaking. I loved that you wrote something down, and it had to change. Because you had to film it, and you couldn't film it in exactly the way that you wrote it. And then once you filmed it, you couldn't keep it. It was not going to be the same thing that you wrote. And then the thing that you filmed had to be edited. And so you had a chance to tell the story again through editing. And to me, the opportunity that filmmaking affords you of just not having to box something up and put it away right away, it was like, oh, this is what I should be doing. This is what people have been telling me when they say I'm a critic and not a writer. It's that I don't look at a creative project and say, that's the best it's going to be, goodbye, the end, moving on to the next thing. I want to see it grow. I want to see it get better. And I also want collaboration. I don't think an artistic product, there are geniuses out there who just, like, you know, take the lump of clay and form it into a brilliant work of art. Most of us need other people. We need feedback. We need the world to inform what we're doing. And filmmaking is this really unique form where every step of the way, you have to ask people for help. And you have to allow them to put their own mark on it, you know? I consider myself a screenwriter. I went to school to be a director. What I love about directing is that I have this grand vision for a product I want to make, a creative vision, and I physically can't accomplish it without other people. So I have to find someone that I really trust to translate what I'm saying about the visuals of the film into the visuals of the film. I need my DP, I need my production designer, I need my actors to, like, be able to hear what I'm saying, which means I always have to be clarifying my own ideas and figuring out the best way to communicate them. And it also means I have to let go, that it's just like, I have explained it the best I can, you are interpreting it in a way that I was not expecting, and that's either an amazing thing or an awful thing, but it's just like, it is what it is, you know? This is what the world is, how it's kind of like hitting onto this product that I thought was like a done deal, but it's not, it's not.
I really love this idea that, like, the fact that things change and that each new process that becomes something different, but it's all still the same thing. It's like people, it's like us. You know what I mean? Like, we become different people with each new journey that we go on, with each new adventure. And I love it too. Like, a lot of people, you know, we want to be, especially writers, we want to be alone in a room. Don't talk to me, what's going on? Heck, I came into this room, I was like, there's so many people in here. Like, it's just like, The openness you have to the collaboration and to the other people, that's so great. And then, like, allowing them to make the changes and just deal with it. Because, I mean, that's life. I mean, how many times have you gone out in the morning with a plan and then life just makes it different? And by the end, you're like, well, I got 20% of that done, but I think I handled it, you know, not too bad.
Yeah.
It just makes me think, like, when you're talking about from screenplay to directing it to editing it, especially when you're part of all those processes, like, that's so wonderful, because it's like watching a kid. It's like raising your child, watching them go off and be an adult, and then watching them be a parent. Like, it's like the editing is like leading to another story. How will this story be told now in this new way? Other thing about editing, with reference to the short film that you have here at the festival, Soft and Pink, I did read that it is a short that is being submitted, but that you have the full feature-length film. Is it done or written? At what point in the process is that?
Sure.
You don't have to give me any secrets.
No secrets. I want as many people as possible to know that I wrote the feature and that I want to make it.
I mean, because it's very, like, you're like, what is happening? What's about to happen? What's going to go on?
Sure.
I love the fact that at the end, spoiler alert, I guess, I'm not going to say what happened, but, like, you're like, wait, what's happening? Is she in trouble? What are they doing? What are they saying? What are the audience going to say? Like, right. Just the whole experience, I'm like, I could watch more of this. Also, P.S., side note, I love your lead actress so much, I want to, like, leave my husband and find her and marry her. But maybe also she's a good actor and it's just the character I love. But anyway, back to you and the process of the feature film.
Yes. So, even as I was developing the script for the short and how I was going to direct it, I already had the feature in mind. I had this idea that the short would be this sort of capsule. Not necessarily that it would be a scene plucked from the movie, because there's actually the antagonist combines the characteristics of two men who are in the feature that kind of act upon the protagonist in two very different ways.
Right.
So I kind of smooshed all of that together. So it's not a scene plucked from it, but the idea that I wanted to get across is that this is a woman who is incredibly talented and finds herself sort of beset on all sides by the men in her life who are trying to keep her from having the kind of career that she wants. The feature is an expansion on that. It shows her rise to fame. It shows her relationship with, she has a female chaperone who is in the short, quite a few years older than her. They develop a romantic relationship. And it kind of becomes this sort of like Coen Brothers meets Thelma and Louise, where they kind of, someone accidentally dies and in the process of covering it up and trying to keep her career from being affected by it, they end up having to murder more people. So,
what a perfect time for a laugh.
So I'm having fun with it.
Yeah.
I
watch all those shows.
Right, every time.
I was just thinking, the show How to Get Away with Murder. It's like every episode, you're like, who's going to die?
Yeah.
Who's going to, the lead?
Yeah.
When will they finally kill off the lead?
Yeah.
Like,
so for me, there's something I've always...
That's hilarious, and now makes me want to watch it so much more.
Yeah. I think that there's an incredible catharsis that can happen in violent films.
Sure.
But I also feel a very strong disconnect from a lot of violent, murdery films that are out there.
Sure.
And to me, I think that there's a lot of room today to tell stories that have to do specifically with female rage, specifically with, you know, we have these, like, female protagonists now that are, like, amazing, unimpeachable, who are being heroes and are, you know, killing bad guys who are unequivocally bad. But what I don't see a lot of right now and what I want to see more of is the our favorite female characters who are like our favorite male characters, where they're flawed. They don't know what they're doing. You know, things are stacked against them and the way they respond is not necessarily the ideal way, but they're sort of like, they're good people making bad decisions.
Yeah, and life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that the sort of like cathartic violent stuff about, you know, like, what is female rage? How does it manifest? What's the fallout from that? And also just like, what leads to that point? What creates a female killer? And I know there's this great TV series that's coming out now, and there's a lot of people who are like asking those questions because killers are great material for drama.
Plus, especially with the sort of new idea that women actually can do all the things.
Sure.
It's like, oh, they can do all the things, like be CEOs and run everything.
Right.
P.S., they can also do the bad
things.
So.
But here's what I think. Here's what I think is important, too.
Yeah.
They do all the things, but they do, women do not do them in the same way or for the same reasons. And I think there's this moment happening right now where people are saying, yeah, I wrote this screenplay and it's not going to sell because it has a male protagonist, so I'm just going to make it a female.
And I
don't think that's something you can really do and have it be good drama, because there's going to be, because we, and I don't want to get into like biological determinism, but I do think testosterone is a element of violence that means that you're a lot more likely, you know, men commit 90% of the murders, and I cannot believe that doesn't have something to do with the levels of testosterone. I have really bad back problems, and for a while I was taking steroid shots, and I would get, like, really roided out and want to just, like, do harm to people, and I was like, oh, wait, is this how men, like, feel when they're frustrated? Like, is this, you know, there's this.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, for women, there's other types of things that impact their life that make them feel like violence is their only option, and it has to do, for me, I think of it as social alienation from self, you know, this, like, gaslighting, this feeling like women can be made to feel like they are completely divorced from their interior self. They're a stranger to themselves, they're nothing, they're awful. And I think that that kind of like pile on, not like this guy fucked with my shit, so I'm gonna kill him. It's more just like, I've lost who I am, and the only way through this is through you. Mm-hmm. You know, like you have to be out of the picture for me to find my way back to myself. So that's the kind of conflict that I'm trying to deal with in the feature, is just sort of like her becoming so beset and so apart from herself that the only way through is through this sort of like dramatic physical violence.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I love it. That sounds so great. And I love the like detail with which you're like, you know, thinking about it, and you seem to have done a lot of research, and even just the experience that you personally had where you felt this rage and you're like, oh, perhaps there is something hormonal about this. I mean, I think about that kind of stuff all the time. You know, I remember members of lots of women's groups and stuff, and we'll be talking about sort of hormonal moments. And I'm like, I get so uncomfortable talking about it, not because I like don't think anyone should hear about it, but because I'm like, I don't want to blame stuff on this. But I think if we were open to not just blaming women in a way that's like, oh, they're hormonal, so they X, Y, Z. It's like every human body has some hormones going on it. And if you try to feel what that is doing to you, you can navigate. Like, I teach acting classes and improv classes, and when I teach them how to do emotions, they're oftentimes people who sign up for an improv class are not trying to be an actor, but they're nervous about it. And so I have developed an exercise to go through emotions so that they could just, like, they could do a monologue in the emotion and then feel their physical body for what it felt like. And then later, when they're on stage, I go, just reference that. If your jaw tightens when you're angry in real life, then when you get on stage, just tighten that jaw, and it'll help you get in an angry place in the scene. Mm-hmm. And I was like, because that's your natural thing. But through teaching that, I realized what my own personal emotion connectors were. And now when I feel my body being angry, I, like, specifically don't make big decisions, or, like, if I hear something in my head, like, you should say this, I'm like, I shouldn't say that. No, no. You're like, oh, I'm super angry. I can feel it all through my body, so none of the words I'm about to say are good words. You're going to smile and nod and walk away and try to breathe. Like, but just the idea of recognizing that, like, you know, who knows? What if there are men out there who, like, don't even have the ability to recognize that their hormones are messing with them? And then they get angry and they think it's justified, like we all do when we're angry. But it's like, if you separate yourself from the animal we are, then maybe we can try to develop and learn new stuff. Weird tangent about hormonal, super into everything you're saying, though.
Yeah, and that kind of plays into it. So in order to write both the feature and the short, I did a lot of research in a lot of different areas. I read a lot of biographies, and I read biographies of Peggy Lee, who is a really amazing songstress and songwriter in the 50s, who lost control of her career, kind of got control taken away from her. Patricia... Oh my God, I forgot her name. An actress, a theater actress in New York who is doing things in the same time. Leslie Gore, who is a teen, you know, sang It's My Party, wrote It's My Party. Did she write it? Maybe that's not true. So all of these women in that time period and kind of their own reflections on their own career and its successes and failures and their own personal lives, which were often extremely revealing for really how flippant they were of things that today we would acknowledge as like extremely abusive situations. And I do think the idea of Queenie Carr, my protagonist, is that she's kind of a woman who is experiencing the same things that a lot of these other women were. But what these other women, because they wanted these careers, because they knew that they kind of had to toe the line about certain things, and just because they were a product of their times, which was, you know, post-World War II. And what I hate about 1950s nostalgia in the U.S. is that is that it leaves the impression that there has been some kind of like straight upward trajectory for women's lib in the US, where it was like, this was extremely particular to the 50s in a lot of ways, because during the war and even before that, there were women in the workforce. There were, you know, there were different ideas about gender roles and what women could do. And like, you know, in Hollywood, the fucking movies of the 1930s and 40s have so many amazing, strong female characters. And then in the 1950s, it's Marilyn Monroe and Jane Mansfield, and it's like the blonde bombshell. Mm. And it, there was a change. And so the 50s are this very particular time where women kind of put blinders on a little bit of just like, I just have to do this shit and say that it's okay. Otherwise, I'm not going to get anything of what I want. And Queenie Carr is someone who kind of is unable to do that. You know, she's unable to do that. She has the same ambitions and the same talent that these other women do, but she can't regulate her hormone. You know, she can't regulate her responses to her own emotions the way that a lot of women had to do. So in that way, it ends up being kind of like a reflection. She's not a modern woman in that way, but she is. She does have these kind of like contradictory. She doesn't have the evolutionary skills that a lot of those women had to have.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm trying to frame it, is like, not that she's like better than the women around her, but she really doesn't have the capacity to toe the line.
You know, I talk about that all the time. Like, I'm from Boston, so I'm a little rougher.
Yeah.
And living in Texas, I just don't even notice like what's going on. Like I'll be totally oblivious to some terrible, like people being mean to other people. And it's like, what? I didn't even, but, you know, if somebody comes up or tries to mess around, I don't even take it. Like, I'm just like, yell right back. It's all like, back it up, you know, like, and some people are like, what? Aren't you afraid to be, what am I afraid of? This guy? Get out of here. Like, I'll yell in your face. You want to see weird? I go weird. Yeah. But, and I think about that, like, when I hear all the women now talking about things that happened to them and different things, and I was like, man, my experience of the world is so different, and it's purely just because of the happenstance of how it worked out. So when I see her, even though, yeah, she seems a bit anachronistic in the world, it's like, no, like me, she just didn't think about these problems. It didn't occur to her that she would have to like deal with somebody telling her like, no, but I'm here to help you. I want to do this music. I'm the musician. Great, be good to me. And it's like, why are you being mean? I don't understand. I feel that way all the time, especially with creative stuff. There gets to be so much politics. And then I'm always like, why are we all mad? Like, but aren't we still doing the thing? It seems fine, right? No? Okay. So I identify with Queenie a lot in that she's like, doesn't want to take any crap and doesn't understand why she should. I've always felt that way. I am, however, a modern woman, I suppose. Tell me, as the last question, what for you is, like, what are you working on right now? What's in your head? You don't have to give me any, like, secret stories that you're, like, you know, don't want to share because you might sell them or whatever. But, like, what's the exciting sort of idea that you have in your head, or what sort of, are you going to research more, you know, women and their, you know, tendency towards crime, or are you going to work on something else? What's the thing that you're focused on right now?
Yeah, I would say, you know, in really broad strokes,
that's all I need.
A lot of my work is kind of always going to be, you know, women making bad decisions for really good reasons. I just find those stories really compelling. So the project that I'm working on now, I just wrote a TV pilot that's kind of like a sci-fi drama. I like the shorthand for it is like it's sort of like X-Files meets my so-called life. It's this teen who's maybe a little bit too autobiographical, but who's just like really, really struggling and ends up kind of in the crosshairs of this like intergalactic conspiracy that has to do with this alien race that's trying to pull humankind back from the brink of self-destruction. And so it's kind of this, it sounds so trite, but it's a story of alienation. It's a story of, sure, like, you know, a young woman who feels like she doesn't, the adults in her life don't have her best interests at heart, which is often true for you know, teenagers, especially teenage girls and black boys. You know, it's like we think that adults are supposed to take care of us, but usually by the time you're 14, they don't really, they're looking after themselves. They don't really see it as a child anymore.
Well, I have a young kid as well. Like, you have a baby, I have a baby. I think if parents are as winging it as I am, then it's a wonder we're all here.
Sure.
Like, and even that, the idea of getting to a certain point, I feel like as a person, your perspective is what makes you make your decisions. And so parents sometimes are just older and past as part of their journey to the point where they can't understand what you're going through because they went through it. They're about 20 years past it. And they can't come back. I mean, the number one thing for the world that could be helpful is empathy. But if nothing else, you know, just to recognize the different parts of your life and how, you know, giving somebody a chance and trying to see it from their point of view. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, I don't understand. Please tell me what you're feeling, because the way I'm looking at it, you're doing these bad things that I don't like, but you want to, so tell me why you should. But not too many people are having those calm conversations with their kids.
Yeah, and mostly I'm just like super eager. I want to be in a writer's room. I want to write for TV, because to me, like, going back to like how I got into this game in the first place is like, I love collaboration. I love that you can get into a room with people who have different perspectives, people who are younger than me and a little bit closer to, you know, those feelings of being an alienated teenager. You know, I just like, I really want to see this story come alive in the context of like a lot of people coming together to talk about, like, you know, these moments in which they weren't heard and how they get themselves heard over a vast cacophony.
It is interesting to hear a bunch of different people's stories, because you're like, whoa, not only is it like, whoa, are we similar, but sometimes it's like, whoa, that's so different from what I lived through.
Yeah.
Like, and both of those, the similar and the difference, is so helpful when you're trying to get through your own trouble.
Yeah.
Thank you, Zoe, for talking to me, for sharing so much great stuff with me.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
No, you're great. Awesome.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.